Let's make our school safer.
Welcome to the Safer Schools podcast, brought to you by Pearson Webb Consulting. Fresh off the back of the ISBA Health and Safety in Estates conference last week, we are back for episode 11, and today is all about minibuses. To help us, we have a very special guest, John Peterson, who is Director of Minibus Services at Rivervale Minibus. Hello, John.
Hello, Adam.
Rivervale, as far as we're concerned, is the go-to place when it comes to minibuses for the education sector. And I just wondered to start whether you might want to give us a little bit of background on Rivervale and what you do.
Sure thing. So Rivervale Minibus obviously offer minibus leasing for schools and colleges throughout the UK. We also offer minibus use sales, driver training, on-site safety inspections, and we'll talk about a few of the products as we go.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to today's topic then. We were discussing before the recording started that taking out a minibus full of kids on the road in this country is probably the most dangerous thing your school does. Driving generally can be one of the most dangerous things that anyone does at work. We often don't think about it that way because it is so commonplace to most people, but there's millions of vehicles on the road. There were 1,600 fatalities last year, 130,000 injuries, and typically around a third of the road deaths each year are work-related. Now, those numbers obviously include drivers, riders, vehicle occupants, cyclists, pedestrians. But if we look purely at minibuses, there are certainly over the last 10 years between 200 and 600 collisions each year and between 5 and 12 fatalities. So making sure your minibuses are safe could not be more important. Okay, following on from that cheery start to the episode, I'm now going to hand over to our experts. We obviously have Michelle here in our safety expert capacity, and John's here as our minibus expert. So I'll hand over to you, Michelle, to give us the background to today's episode.
Thank you, Adam. So yes, we wanted to do this episode all around minibus compliance and ensuring safe vehicles, safe drivers and safe journeys, because from the work we do with our schools, I do find that this is an area where there are definitely aspects that require improvement. There are a lot of gaps out there. I think there's still quite a lot of work to be done with regards to awareness within our schools. And so we thought this would be a perfect opportunity to get the message out there and talk to schools about what they need to do and how they can ensure better risk management when it comes to their minibuses. I think the first place to start off with really, John, is what is a minibus? What do we mean by a minibus?
A minibus, right. So a minibus is anywhere from 9 to 16 passengers, 17 including the driver.
And in terms of the vehicles we see in our schools, obviously there are other vehicles that I'll see schools using, you know, 9-seaters, etc. But I think we're just going to be focusing this episode today around minibuses, really.
Yeah.
Because the rules are obviously slightly different. Okay, so in terms of operating a minibus within schools, my understanding, John, is that schools have two options in terms of how they can operate those minibuses legally. So let's just talk through those options that are available to them.
Okay, yeah. So the first one is a Section 19 permit, and that is a school that is operating under a charitable status. The second one is a PSV, Restricted or Full Operator's Licence, where the school is operated solely for profit and charges for the journey.
Yeah, and I've actually got some of our independent schools are proprietor owned, and so they don't hold that charitable status. And so the only option available to them is that they must have a PSV operator's license in place. But my understanding is the significant majority of schools will be eligible for a Section 19 permit. And that makes things a little bit easier, doesn't it, along the line in terms of driver training and licensing and general running.
It does. It's a lot easier in terms of the legalities of what's required. You've got to have a permit on display in every vehicle that you have, that you run. Even if you daily hire for one day, you still need to have a permit on display in that vehicle.
And my understanding is that permit actually exempts them from needing to apply for a PSV operator's licence, even if they're operating it for hire or reward. So if they're taking money, you know, for pupils going out on school trips, or if they're operating a home-to-school transport service, as long as they're not doing that for a profit, if they're just charging costs to cover pure costs of operating that service, then they should be able to do that under a Section 19 permit.
That is correct, yeah. The other benefit of a Section 19 permit is it allows the school to pay their drivers.
So if someone's employed to drive, because that's always a bit of a contentious issue, isn't it? They can drive for hire and reward on a voluntary basis, but if they're not driving on a voluntary basis, so if they're being paid to drive, or is driving forms part of their job description, then that affects the licensing side of it as well, doesn't it? But basically, under a Section 19 permit, they are permitted to pay their drivers. Absolutely. And we'll come on to the licensing side of it a little bit later.
Yeah, we will. But yes, that's correct.
We've been talking primarily about the Section 19 permits up until now. Now, obviously, most of our clients are within the independent school sector. They have charitable status, and that's the way they operate. But on the PSV side, how does that actually differ, John? What are the main differences between the two?
PSV is for operating for a profit. They will need safety inspections every 6 weeks, a tachograph on the vehicle, and a full-time transport manager.
Okay, so significant increase in costs over operating under the Section 19 permit.
Absolutely.
And then also in terms of driver training, that's quite different, John, as well, isn't it, if they're doing PSV?
Yeah, so the driver training itself is a D1 plus CPC, yeah. Which is quite a lengthy process.
So I think, you know, as we've been talking through between the two, it's quite clearly less time consuming and more cost effective to operate under a Section 19 permit if that option is available to you.
If the option's available, definitely go for Section 19 permit.
But I think just to finish off on this section, the most important thing to say that as a school, if you're operating minibuses, you have to operate under one or the other, either PSV operator license or Section 19. Because if you're not operating under either, then you're probably operating your minibuses illegally. And I was talking to the group earlier on, and this is something I have come across in my schools where they are operating minibuses. They don't have PSV, they don't have Section 19. And I've had to flag to them on their audit that they are currently operating them illegally, and they need to obviously address that fairly swiftly.
Absolutely. And we've got a team full of people here ready to help if anyone needs any help.
Great.
The other thing we discussed on that front with regards to sort of illegal operation of minibuses, there may be a situation where some of our independent school clients are running holiday clubs. They might well be open to a wider group. It might be effectively members of the general public, not just school activities, not just school pupils. And quite often they're operated by their commercial arm, the trading company. Now, am I right in thinking the Section 19 permit would not permit that setup?
Yeah, I wouldn't take that risk, in all honesty.
Because they're operating for profit, essentially.
Exactly.
It's a very different offering to transporting your pupils around to a sporting activity or an educational visit, isn't it? You are taking money to make profit on a commercial basis. So, yeah, very, very different. And I think that happens quite a lot in our schools from the discussions that I've been having recently. Yeah. So certainly a bit of a gap that needs to be plugged, we would suggest.
Okay, so if we move on then, the rest of this episode we are going to break down into three sections. That's going to be safe vehicles, safe drivers, and safe journeys. John, if we start with safe vehicles, does that suit you?
That suits me fine, no problem at all. Once you have your vehicle, there are a number of things to obviously think about. It's not just jumping in and driving the vehicle. Little things, obvious things, insurance, road tax, annual MOTs with minibuses.
Even when they're brand new, so it's not that same 3 year.
Yeah, it's not a 3 year period.
Okay.
Your routine servicing, of course, and your on site safety inspections, which are required as part of your Section 19 permit.
Okay, and how often would those be completed?
The DVSA recommend every 10 weeks if it's brand new vehicle. Anything 12 years and older is every 6 weeks.
Okay. And who can complete those safety checks, John? I often get asked this by my schools. Is this something they can do in house, or do they need to outsource it?
They can do it in-house. By in-house, we're talking about, you know, someone they know. Let's say a mechanic, local mechanic, let's say. However, if your local mechanic does carry out your routine servicing, it's always best to get a second opinion.
Otherwise, it's like they're checking their own work, isn't
it? Exactly.
We say this about the statutory inspections as well, and the servicing and maintenance. You want to get someone different to do the two so that they're not seen to be checking their own work.
You're absolutely spot on, yeah.
I think just, you mentioned insurance, John, earlier. I think one of the things to point out here, obviously, myself and Adam are from an insurance background, and it is really common that fleet lists will not be up to date. So if you've got rid of a minibus and perhaps you've got a new leased minibus that you've brought in, have you notified your insurer of that change? You need to make sure that your insurance is covering the vehicles that you actually have, and that that list remains current at all times, and keep your insurer up to date of any changes.
And any temporary vehicles. I see it was quite often there was a hire of a minibus at the last minute because they've got too many sports fixtures or things like that don't always get added onto the policy.
So that's all the kind of external checks. What about in-house checks? So in terms of the checks needed to be done by the school staff?
Yeah, so you should be carrying out daily walk-around checks on minibuses. You should also be carrying out weekly walk-around checks on minibuses. We do, at this point, I'll jump in, because we have a free app, which will hopefully help with both of those checks. And it's My Minibus Manager is available in the App Store and the
Google Play Store as well, would it be?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
we'll put a link to that in the episode description for you.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that I come across actually really commonly on my audits, is that those aren't being done, or if they are being done, they're certainly not being documented. And so having something like an app just makes it a lot easier, doesn't it, for staff, rather than having, you know, copious amounts of paperwork that they've got to complete.
It does. And that you've hit the nail on the head there about it being documented. The app will tell you, there's a short video on there on how to carry out the check and what to look for, essentially.
I've seen that. I think it's on your YouTube channel as well, isn't it?
It will be, yes. Yeah, everything, it will all be on there. Yeah.
And another question that I get asked quite commonly as well is that with regards to those daily walkarounds or those pre-drive checks, I've had schools, you know, where the teaching staff are saying, you know, we haven't possibly got time to do those. And I'm getting asked by my schools, well, can I get our maintenance staff to do those for them? That's something that I get asked quite a lot. And I'll go back to them and say, the responsibility to make sure that vehicle is safe to drive rests with the driver. In my opinion, it absolutely has to sit with the driver. They can't offload that responsibility on somebody else. If something goes wrong,
it's the driver's responsibility.
It's going to be that driver that's going to be.
If the vehicle had a bold tyre and you were stopped by the police, the driver's responsibility, you're the one in who's going to get in trouble for that.
And in terms of getting into trouble, just give us a feel, John, for what the kind of consequences could be from something such as a bold tyre.
On a minibus, that could be up to 3 points on your licence and £2,500 per tyre.
Wow, so yeah, we're talking about...
And that's a fine. You can't get the school to pay that on your behalf. That's down to the driver.
It's on the driver.
And I commonly pick this up on my audits that have said that either they're not being done or there appears to be lots of gaps. And I always say to my schools, you know, you should have some sort of audit process, some sort of spot check in place to make sure that your drivers are completing those pre-drive tracks. And if you've got a way of checking, you know, you'll have people, those people who are really good and do them very, very well and always do them. And then you'll have those staff that don't take it seriously for whatever reason or aren't doing them. And you really do need to jump on that, because part of the school's responsibility is making sure that all of your measures are actually being actively implemented. And the only way you can check that is by doing audits or by doing spot checks to make sure that those pre-drive checks are actually taking place.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Michelle. It's it is very, very important. Whether you have the time or not, it needs to be done before the vehicle's driven.
And I think the other thing that I've picked up quite commonly in my audits as well is that there's a bit of a lack of a process for drivers to report defects. So maybe a defect has been reported on a paper form that's sat in the minibus, and then there's no evidence to me as an auditor that it's actually been actioned and anything's been done about it. And so you need to ensure that you've got robust processes in place that if drivers are picking up on defects, obviously if it's an urgent defect and it's going to impact that minibus's safety immediately, then it needs to be taken out of use and marked as such so that no one else comes along and uses it. But if it's not maybe that urgent, then needs to be a robust process for somebody able to pick that up and take it forward and actually ensure that it's actioned.
Absolutely. And the app, our free app, will go some way to do that as well. Whoever the main person is at the school will get a copy of that report.
And is that app free for Rivervale customers or is just generally free,
free
for anyone
minibus
to use?
Users in general.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And I think the last thing I wanted to say here is that, again, when I'm auditing, is that there's generally a real lack of what I would call management oversight. So usually if I ask for the information about how they're insuring safe vehicles, so, you know, all the records, the insurance and the MOT and the servicing and the safety checks, I'll usually be given a file or a series of files. And then I'll start to look through it and it's all out of order and they've got like 10 minibuses and I'm trying to piece together and work out, right, is everything up to date? Have they all had their safety checks within the last 10 weeks? It's like wading through treacle. Mm. So I always say to my schools, just have a spreadsheet. It doesn't have to be a posh online system, but just have a spreadsheet, maybe a calendar set up where you can flag this is what have been done. This is when the next safety check is due, so that you've got that management oversight to be able to identify any gaps quickly.
It is worth mentioning that under a Section 19 permit, you should have a 6-month rolling plan of all maintenance requirements on the vehicle, and you must keep your records for at least 15 months.
Okay, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that. And I think, as I said, a lot of my schools, I don't think would be able to demonstrate that at the moment. So yeah, that's certainly something that they need to get in place. And I think when you said about the records being kept for 15 months, that's obviously a requirement under the permit. From an insurance perspective, I suppose we would suggest that if there's been any kind of accident whatsoever, that you're going to want to keep any records relating to the vehicle involved in that accident. You know, if somebody's injured, for example, you're going to want to keep them for at least 3 years just because of the statute of limitations on any personal injury claims that might arise. Okay, and then just to finish off this section on safe vehicles, the other thing I wanted to mention here was trailers. So lots of our schools will have various trailers that attach to the minibuses for carrying luggage, or they might be towing rowing boats or all sorts of things. And I think, again, this is an aspect that's not typically considered in terms of the requirements on the vehicle maintenance. In terms of the driver licensing requirements will obviously vary depending on what qualification they've got and when they pass their test and all that kind of thing. And obviously the weight of the trailer will have an impact on the overall weight of the vehicle, which will again impact on what kind of license is required and all the legalities surrounding it. So rather than go into detail about that here, I think we'll just put a link in the episode description for you to the OEA PNG guidance, which has got a specific section on there about transporting trailers on minibuses.
Licensing was mentioned a few times there then. So if we move on next to safe drivers, licensing is obviously one of the key considerations there, not the only one. But what else do we need to think about when we come to drivers?
So drivers need to be at least 21 years old, have at least 2 years' experience, and they're not able to take the minibus abroad. The other thing to bear in mind as well is any drivers over 70 years old need to have a medical.
Yeah, and I think actually that's something that I don't think a lot of schools are aware of, is that once the driver hits 70, then they need to be having medicals in order to drive that minibus. So let's go back round to licensing then, because I admit, I think this is a really complex topic. We get a lot of queries on this from our schools, and I will admit that every single time I have a query on licensing, I have to go back and reread all the government guidance just to be sure that I am giving the correct advice. So if we just take a typical school who will operate their minibuses under a Section 19 permit, what type of licenses will their drivers require?
So it all depends on the weight of the vehicle. Anything up to 3.5 tonne can be driven on a car licence, a B licence, and anything over 3.5 tonne must have a D1.
Actually, if I could just jump in there, so I know it was an issue several years back, but some of the larger minibuses were now becoming over 3.5 tonne. Are there still many options on the market below that 3.5 tonne limit?
There are still options. Obviously, any 9-seater is classed as a car, can be driven on a car licence. You can get the 12-seat Ford Transit, which is 3.5 tonne, and the any sort of converted 15-seat Peugeot Boxer Citroën Mille.
Okay, fine. And with regards, I'm just thinking ahead now to the future, electric vehicles, electric minibuses, how much would they weigh typically? Because they tend to be a lot heavier when
they
it's a car.
They will be a lot heavier, you're right. D1 is required for all electric at the moment. We're hoping things change going forward on that front, but at the moment...
So that would be D1?
D1 required, yeah.
And I think this is a bit of a complex one, because also whether you have D1 will depend on when you pass your test. So if it was pre-January 97, you will often have what's referred to as grandfather rights, where you'll have a D1 entitlement on your licence. But if you're like me and you pass your test after January 1997, then you will not. And then if you do need a D1 to be able to drive that minibus, you're going to have to go off and do the D1 test. It is really, really important to get the licensing right. And what we will do, there is a government website where you can input details about the vehicle and about the type of journey that you're doing, and it will churn out what type of license that you need. And I'd really recommend that schools spend a lot of time in making sure that your staff have got the appropriate license for driving the minibus, because it is really complicated. You mentioned there about whether or not somebody gets paid to drive, and that can be a little bit of a contentious issue, can't it? Because if you've got a member of teaching staff who's driving on a voluntary basis, taking a group off to a sports activity or something, for example, then I suppose the argument is they are not being paid specifically to drive. But if you employ a driver, then my understanding is they absolutely have to have D1, because they are being employed to drive and they are being paid to drive.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you are paid to drive, D1 is required.
I've actually had a client in the past with that who had a novel way to get around it, which was they had, I think, a team of 10 or 11 drivers who were employed to drive. They did the home to school runs, they did the maintenance checks and all that sort of stuff. Having given them the advice on the fact that they needed the D1 licence, the following year I came back to review the health and safety audit, and they no longer had a team of 10 or 11 drivers, but they did have 10 new grounds assistants with occasional driving responsibilities. What's your view of that one?
Let's see if it stands up in court.
Yeah, probably not. One thing we haven't discussed yet under the driver heading is the fact that they would need to be insured to drive the minibus. Now, it may well be that the policy is set up on a named driver basis and there's only, you know, approved individuals that are able to drive. It might be on an age basis. There might be an age limit of 25 to 70 or 21 to 70. and anyone outside of that may need to be referred into your insurer. Equally, if they've had accidents, convictions, there may well be additional conditions or increased excesses on the insurance policy.
Okay, so in terms of insurance, I think it's just absolutely imperative that you liaise with your broker or your insurer to just see if there are any conditions that need to be met, check what information you need to be providing, and making sure that you are keeping your insurer updated on any changes when it comes to your drivers. Okay, so on to another complex subject, I'm afraid, John, with regards to training for drivers. So again, this is a query that comes up an awful lot. So obviously, if they have to go off and do their D1 test, they will have very specific training on that. What about those staff that are able to drive on a Category B licence?
Okay, so staff available to drive on a Category B should, best practices, at very least, have a MIDAS. And there is a big difference from jumping out of your car and into a minibus. Mm-hmm. You've seen the size of cars these days against, you know, some of these things are very, very big conversions. So the MIDAS involves a theory beforehand and then a one-to-one training with a ADI-approved driving instructor.
And in terms of how long that MIDAS training will last for, John, once somebody's completed it, when do they have to then redo it?
So it's renewable every 4 years.
Okay. And I'll say here that even though MIDAS isn't a legal requirement, it's something that I always recommend that my schools do if they're not currently doing it. And that's because if there was to be an accident of any sort, I wouldn't want to be sat opposite a parent who's, you know, had a child injured in a minibus crash and explaining to them why I haven't provided any additional training for the drivers of my minibuses. You know, I drive a car, I passed my test after 1997. I would be able to go and drive a minibus on a lightweight minibus on a Category B license by law. Would I feel comfortable doing that without any additional training? Absolutely not. So yeah, it is something that we always do recommend to our schools.
And if you haven't done that, as a quick win, you might want to consider our online driver assessment, which is 4 modules of training and a risk assessment for your drivers.
Okay, so we mentioned earlier on about checking that they've got the appropriate license. But I suppose even there's lots of other checks that we need to be doing on our drivers before we allow them to drive a minibus for the first time. And then we should be repeating those checks annually. So one of those is obviously checking their license. And we'd always recommend that you get them to provide the DVLA check code that you can then go on, use that to check the details of their license. That'll also tell you if they've got any endorsement on their license. You should also be asking them if they've had any motoring convictions, if they've ever been refused motor insurance for any reason, if they have any disabilities or medical conditions that may need to be considered in terms of their driving, in terms of how it may impact their driving, and also if they're taking any medication that could potentially impact their driving as well. And lots of schools, from what I've seen, will do the license check, but won't necessarily cover those other aspects, or they'll do it prior to that first time driving and then won't do it at all thereafter. And I'll always say to them, you really should be repeating those checks annually as an absolute minimum.
And it probably goes without saying, but obviously you need to make sure any of those checks that you're doing on the drivers are documented. Similarly, training is recorded, and that will then feed into your approved driver's list. So who is approved to drive school vehicles? And actually, more importantly, probably, which vehicles are they approved to drive?
Yeah, and this is something that I'll always look at quite closely on audit, is how are schools managing their vehicles and their drivers to make sure that that they're appropriately licensed and qualified to drive the different vehicles. And I know we're just focusing on minibuses during this podcast episode, but I think it's really important that whatever vehicles you operate within your school, it might be that you've got pool cars, you might have grounds vehicles, you might have electric buggies that get driven around the site. I would want to see ideally an approved list of drivers for every vehicle that school operates, regardless of whether you own the vehicle or you lease it or whatever. If you're operating that vehicle, I'd want to see a list of who has been approved to drive that vehicle. And obviously, to gain that approval, they need to be able to demonstrate they've got the appropriate license, that license is in date. And I've got a little story that I'll go on to about that next. They need to demonstrate that, you know, about their convictions, medical, that they've completed the correct training. And all of that information needs to go on that approved driver list, together with, for each of the drivers, the list of vehicles that they have been permitted to drive. That's often something that's missing. I'll have a list of drivers and the date their license was checked, but it doesn't tell me what vehicles that driver is permitted to drive. And just going back to the story that I mentioned, in one of my colleges, I operated an approved list. And as part of that process, this was back before you were able to get the DVLA check code. So we asked people to bring in their driving licenses to us for us to take a photocopy of and keep it on file. And I had a head of department who'd been pushed off the approved list because he hadn't brought his driving license in to me. And I could see on my trip system that he had a trip coming up in a couple of weeks. So I emailed him and said, look, just to let you know, you need to bring in driving license to me before you go out on this trip so that I can add you back to the approved list. Needless to say, it didn't happen. It came to the day of the trip. He arrives in my office ready to take the minibus key. And I said, look, I'm really sorry, but I've mentioned this to you before. You haven't given me your license. I can't let you take the keys. And we had a rather heated discussion, should we say, where there was probably some expletives. And bottom line is, I wouldn't let him take the minibus out on that day. He then came back into my office a good few weeks later and pretty much threw his license to me across the desk. I took one look at it and saw that it had expired 8 months ago. And when I told him, I think he looked at me and thought I was joking. And I said, we're not trying to be the fun police here. We're just trying to make sure that all of these vehicles are being operated legally and that you're not going to get into any trouble as well. Obviously, he'd been driving around with his car without a license for 8 months, which is one thing. But I said, you know, it would be very, very different as well if you were carrying a minibus full of students. So it's really another reason why you need to do those checks annually, because people don't always realise that their licenses expire. And I think as schools, we need to be having that management oversight to just double check that everybody is driving with a valid license.
I think one of the key points from that story there as well is that if he had access to those keys, it's clear from his attitude that he would have taken the minibus, taken the kids out and would have been driving with an invalid license. So making sure you have control of access to those keys and making sure that unless they are on the approved driver list, they can't get access to them, they can't take vehicles out.
Yeah, and again, we see this really commonly in schools that the keys are held behind a reception or in a porter's lodge or in a security lodge where they're not actually being held securely. And in a sense, anybody could go in and take those keys and take those vehicles out, which is absolutely not the situation that we want to be in.
Okay, so we've covered the safe vehicles aspect. We've covered safe drivers. We're on to safe journeys. Michelle.
Right, so the first thing that you're going to need to think about is the length of that journey. And what I'm really considering here, what I'm worried about, is driver fatigue. So is a second driver qualified to the same level, obviously, going to be required for that journey? It's really important that your drivers are appropriately rested before they undertake any driving duties. And although there's different requirements in terms of driver's hours and breaks if you're operating under a PSV licence, but if you're operating under a Section 19 permit, we would always recommend that drivers are required to take a rest break of at least 15 minutes every 2 hours of a journey. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about was in terms of what other duties has that driver been doing that day. So if you have a member of staff who's been teaching all day and then they are required to get in a minibus and drive 3 hours to take a group of pupils up to a residential in the Lake District, then that is, in my opinion, not appropriate. It's a really long day for them. They need to be well rested before they undertake any journeys, because the risk of driver fatigue and the potential consequences are just unthinkable, really. So you really need to make sure that this is all considered in your policies, in your risk assessments, and that your drivers are aware of the requirements on them in terms of breaks and being well rested before journeys.
Another driver requirement, if I can just jump in there, because I don't think we've actually discussed it yet, but I know it was on our list when we were planning the session, need to ensure that all passengers are wearing seatbelts as well. And if they're under the age of 14, it is actually the responsibility of the driver to check and make sure that they are. The other topic, again, we haven't discussed under this same heading, is car seats and booster seats and appropriate restraints for younger children. There is a height limit, I think, which is 1.35 metres. And if they're below that, there is an increased risk of injury. So obviously making sure that you've got the appropriate seats in place, appropriate child restraints if needed, and making sure they're used on journeys.
So on to routes, John. What kind of things do we need to be thinking about?
We need to be looking at thinking about use of sat-nav, leaving plenty of time for the journey to prevent rushing. Speed limits. Speed limits are obviously different for minibuses as they are for cars. Always bear that in mind. Motorways, for example, minibuses are not allowed to be in the outside lane unless overtaken an obstruction on the inner two. Mm-hmm. So that's always something to think about. Height restrictions is another one. Car parks and things like that, which have barriers, always worth looking at, because the height of a minibus is a lot higher than your car.
Yeah, I suppose if you're not used to driving it, that'd probably be something I would do. You know, I'd just get myself trapped under some car park barrier somewhere. So, yeah, absolutely need to be thinking of any low bridges and things like that that might be en route as well.
And making sure the drivers actually know that. You know, is that sign posted in the cab of the vehicle? Or, you know, is it part of the information you're giving to them? Because, yes, the height will be listed on the car park barrier, but they might not know how high that minibus is.
We always try and leave the dimensions in the bus. It's something that every bus we deliver, we always try and keep the dimensions in there, height and width.
Brilliant. And if I can, just wanted to add in there, when we're talking about routes, if your school operates a home-to-school service for your pupils, it'll often be down to the school to determine the drop-off and pick-up points. And when I speak to my schools, when we're looking at things like risk assessments for those services, this is something that is really commonly missed. So, you know, where are the children being picked up from? Where are they being dropped off? Is it on the side of a country road, you know, where there's no pavement? So we need to be thinking about making sure that those pickup and drop off points are appropriate and that they are considered within your risk assessments.
Key considerations for planning your journey would obviously be consider the weather conditions, traffic conditions, always think ahead of time, make sure you've got the right supplies on board in case of any emergencies, high-vis, jackets, water, who's your breakdown cover with, all these things need to be addressed.
Yeah, I think in making sure that information is available. So I always say to my schools, a lot of them will have like a folder in the minibuses that has got the contact details for their insurance company. It's got the contact details for the breakdown company. And then it might have procedures to follow in the event of a breakdown, procedures to follow in the event of an accident. Because I think when something like that happens, people can sometimes panic and they don't always necessarily follow the steps that you would normally. So it's nice to have that written down as a series of steps that they can follow in those scenarios. And we talked earlier, didn't we, about the need to, just as a between ourselves, in terms of making sure that staff do know what to do if they break down, what the sort of safest way to deal with that is. Do they stay within the vehicle? Do they take everybody out of the vehicle and put them behind a crash barrier? I think it depends on exactly where you break down, doesn't it, really, as to what the safest option is. But you don't want them to be dealing with that at the side of the road. Really, they should be trained, they should be briefed on that and know exactly what to do in that scenario.
Another thing to think about with routes is obviously refueling. And if you've got an electric vehicle, the charging aspect, how long it takes, what to do in that downtime.
I don't have an electric vehicle, but I've heard all about the range anxiety. And I can just imagine that is a very real thing. So, yeah, making sure that you're planning out and, I suppose, appropriate places to charge the vehicle as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's it. There's a very good app, actually, ZapMap, which gives you an opportunity. It's got every charging point.
Oh, great.
UK.
We'll put a link to that in the episode description for you then. Brilliant. And I think that leads neatly on, actually, to supervision. So with regards to your journey, thinking about what level of supervision is going to be required and whether you're going to need any passenger assistance. So it's going to very much depend on the nature of your pupils, the age of the pupils. That doesn't always necessarily mean that they're automatically mature, though. So thinking about, are there anyone in the group with special needs, anyone with disabilities, anyone with medical conditions? And that is going to impact on your decision as to whether you need one or more passenger assistance to support. And just in terms of what John was saying there on refueling, you know, not just thinking about the driving part of the journey, because if you did have to stop, if you broke down, if you're making any stops on routes, you know, for rest stops, for example, thinking about the level of supervision. Is it, if it's just going to be the driver with all of the pupils on that bus, is that going to be appropriate, or do you need to have at least one or more additional adults there to be able to support that supervision?
Okay, so we've covered safe journeys, we've done the vehicles, we've done the drivers. What else do we need to consider, Michelle, before we sign off?
I suppose just to pull everything together, I have mentioned it a little bit along the way, but schools need to make sure that they have policies in place that set out how they ensure safe vehicles, safe drivers and safe journeys. And not just, you know, sort of generic statements, but in terms of maintenance checks, for example, well, who's responsible for making sure that those happen? In terms of pre-drive checks, how do drivers complete them? Do they need to complete a form, or is there an app or an online system they should use? Those policies need to be really specific to the way in which you're actually managing minibuses on a day-to-day basis. And you also need to ensure that you have appropriate risk assessments in place for any activities relating to minibuses. So most of my schools will have like an overarching generic minibus risk assessment in place, and that can be sort of adapted for each trip if there's maybe anything out of the ordinary, if you've got a particularly long journey, for example. And then I'd also want to see a separate risk assessment in place for something like a home to school provision, because that's obviously very, very different to taking pupils out on an educational visit or a sporting activity. But again, those risk assessments should set out the hazards associated with your vehicles, your drivers and your journeys, and the agreed control measures that you've got in place for each of those things. And then what I'd also want to do is get my approved drivers who are on my approved list to read through both the policy and the risk assessment, and I'd want them to sign and date to confirm that they've read, understood and agreed to abide by those documents. And I'd want them to do that prior to them being given permission to go onto that approved list. And ideally, that should be repeated annually as a minimum as well. Something I did in one of my colleges, and it worked really, really well. It just means that the drivers are very much aware of their responsibilities in terms of minibus management. And then if there is a problem further down the line and you need to go down a disciplinary route, it also gives you that paper trail, that documentary evidence as a bit of a backup, really, that they've agreed to abide by that. And then lastly, and I've mentioned spot checks, I think, elsewhere in this podcast, but schools really do need to be completing audits, completing spot checks to make sure that all aspects of their minibus management are being adhered to, that they're being complied with. And obviously, if that throws up any shortcomings, then the school needs to put in place an action plan to address those pretty promptly.
Okay, so that's just about it for episode 11 on minibuses. It's important to say here that we've only really scratched the surface. I mean, looking at the time code there, we've been going about 40 minutes or so. You could easily do a full day, you know, training course on this topic and still wouldn't have exhausted the subject matter. If only we knew of somebody that provided such training. John, any ideas?
Yeah, we do. So luckily you do. You know someone. Rivervale Minibus offer a minibus management course. We used to deliver it in person. However, it's now an online facility. We're hoping to bring it back next year, back in person again. It covers a legal framework, vehicles, driver, journey, and section 19.
Okay, excellent. So that'll cover a lot of what we've discussed today, but in more detail. Thanks for your time today, John. Very much appreciated.
Thank you.
If any of our listeners, though, were confused, because I am a little bit on some of the topics we've discussed, and wanted to know more about Rivervale, or they had some additional queries, where can they get hold of you?
Yeah, no worries. So the website address is www.rivervale.co.uk/minibus. And the email address is minibus@rivervale.co.uk.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thanks also to our listeners. That's it for today's episode of Minibuses. We hope you found it useful. If you did, please feel free to comment, like and share the details with anyone else you might think finds it useful. Obviously, we focus primarily on schools. But as with a lot of the topics we discuss on the podcast, it's going to be useful to a much wider group than that. So please do feel free to pass it on to anyone and everyone.
The Safer Schools podcast will be back on Friday, the 1st of November, where we will be joined by Rebecca Coates of Propertico to talk to you all about what you need to do in terms of managing radon in schools. And that's to coincide with Radon Awareness Week. And just lastly, if you'd like to know more about how Pearson Web can be of support to you and your school, then please visit our website at www.pearsonweb.co.uk.
That's it for now. Please join us for episode 12.
Let's make our school safer.